Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have an amazing guest, you know, a guest that has done it, you know, a few times, you know, again, the building, the scaling, the financing, you name it, you know, all of that good stuff that I would like to hear. And right now, you know, he just started his latest baby. We're going to talk about that. You know, the previous one is flying too. So, you know, he's had remarkable success. And again, we're going to be talking about other topics like scaling a company, not just the product, but also think about the people. Also saying the same goodbye to the social life, you know, which is the, I think that a lot of people have alluded to this in the startup world. And I think that there's always a balance. And if you don't take care of yourself, then nothing else, you know, is really going to matter, right? I think there was a Harvard study that talked about happiness being tied to the relationships that you have, the degree of relationships that you have. So again, you know, super inspiring conversation. And without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Zver Duohom. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Alejandro. Thanks for having me.
So originally born and raised in Copenhagen in Denmark, give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up for you?
Well, pretty good, actually. I mean, I'm incredibly lucky being born in Copenhagen, I think, because growing up as a kid, I mean, it was easy. I could go to school wherever I wanted to. I had parents who were quite entrepreneurial as well. So I grew up in a place where we would have construction workers all the time because they, you know, my room would never be finished. There was always something going on. We had a lot of guests, so I had a great time when I was a kid, and had a hard time leaving Copenhagen. Actually, I sometimes envy other people who've traveled the world more than I have. But you should come here. Copenhagen is it's a neat little place, definitely.
Now, in your case, you came from a family of entrepreneurs. So you saw early on the ups and downs, you know, of building something from nothing and scaling it. So how was that like for you?
Well, I certainly saw the risk it comes with up close, because it wasn't unusual for us that my parents would have a conversation with me when I was as young as 10 that we might not be able to stay in the apartment because, well, the business wasn't going that great. And sometimes it was pretty similar to when in an early stage startup, I think you talk about how short your runway is. That was a bit how it was at home when I grew up.
So in your case, I mean, it's like, you know, you had it in your blood. You knew that it was going to happen eventually. And in fact, you went at it, you know, in your 20s, early 20s. So how was that journey like all the way to let's give this a shot?
Well, I think I was a part of a group of friends where, you know, whenever we would have a beer, we would come up with this new venture that we would do. And we started dreaming about building this and that. And it was a bit of everything. So there was no kind of the one project didn't have anything in common with the next one, so it was just random ideas. And at some point I felt that a few of my friends were starting laughing about it because I talked a lot but I didn't do anything about it. And then I sat down with one of my friends and we agreed we can't become the joke of the group, so now we actually need to do it. So we really took the step in my late 20s where we just jumped on a project that we've been working with in theory for a couple of years. We both came out of the music industry and wanted to do something at the time that could help, amongst others, some of our friends who were struggling to make money with music. So that was really the opening for us to begin with. We did really poorly. We didn't know anything about digital. So we started with a website and then turned it into an app once the app store came around, pretty quickly realizing that talking to engineers is very, very different than talking to one another. So we hadn't done anything like that before. And what we experienced was that when talking, if you're not able to articulate what it is that you want to do, then you get exactly what you asked for, but not what you wanted. So we pretty much just crashed and burned that thing within a couple of years. But it was a very, it was meaningful. And we learned a lot.
Well, you say we learned a lot. What was the lesson that you took away from that journey? One.
First of all, I wanted to do something digital again. I knew that, But the fact that I just couldn't articulate what it was that I wanted to do, that I saw that the gap between someone who's creative and the ones who will be able to turn that into something is just enormous. If you don't have anyone who can speak both languages or translate what it is that someone like I would say to something that an engineer would be able to turn into something substantial, then you're screwed, which was very much what I told them at the IT university where I applied and said, I'm about to start my second venture. I crashed my first one. I really don't know what I'm doing. Would you please help me understand? So I just laid my cards on the table and then went to school, ready to learn.
So then what happened next?
Well, the next thing was then while I was there, I then had this it was a very small idea with my younger brother, actually. We'd been talking for years about feeling that being woken up by an alarm clock in the morning was just super annoying. So we imagined that if someone would say something nice to us in the morning, you know, imagine that someone would just say, Alejandro, good morning, coffee is ready, and you have a meeting in half an hour, so you might want to get into the shower. Just make it more pleasant. That was the idea, nothing else. And then we started building that app. And initially it was friends being able to wake each other up. So you would still be in control of your alarm clock, but I could send you a message and wake you up in the morning. That was it. But we then changed it after a year or so into something different. And then came, somehow we merged it with podcasts. So we had users who said, well, couldn't you get some celebrity to say something? Well, we could try. And then it started with comedians making jokes in the morning. That became a bit too aggressive for users. Then they said, could it be a bit longer? Could you maybe do yoga sessions or whatever? And before we knew, we had this platform with so much very, very different content. And then we really merged into turning it into this podcast service where we also created very, very short form format just because you don't have an hour in the morning to listen to content. So we started creating content that was 3 to 5 minutes long. And that pretty much just propelled into becoming this service. We just didn't really know how to make money of it because the users wouldn't pay for it. And the people creating the content, they obviously wouldn't either. So it was kind of hard for us to figure out how to make money of it. At the time, I then had I would call it a one man advisory board. So there was this entrepreneur here in Denmark who's been a household name in the startup community for years, and he was nice enough to spend, say, a few hours every other month with me to talk about how to get on with the project and what should I do, what should I add, what should I change. And then he called me late in 2018 and said, well, I've actually been listening to podcasts now. He'd done it on another service and he said it was a really crappy experience. I'm sure we can do better than that. And in about 2-3 weeks, we just, right before Christmas in 18, we then talked about, okay, we can actually build something that would be different and better than the other services, and then founded in 2019, Podimo.
Which became a smashing success, and it happened literally in a kitchen. I mean, so what walk us through how, because I mean, that it's a crazy story, right? So you guys are here in a kitchen, you're not cooking food, you're cooking a startup, right? And then all of a sudden that goes from like, people in the kitchen just like sitting around thinking about it, working on it, to all of a sudden like 100 people in like 18 months. I mean, this is crazy.
Yeah, it is. And it was completely new for me as well, because I had only done these classic bootstrap startups, you know, sitting in a basement, a couple of guys, we had some employees, but we never became more than 6 or 7 people. So when Morten and I sat at his place up to Christmas in 18, I had my little service, and his basic idea was, you know, he'd listened to a show on another service where when he finished one episode, it didn't just continue to episode 2, and he didn't get any recommendations for new content. So his thinking was, there's so much great content out there. How can we could we create a service where that makes it easier to discover great content? Could we add to that original formats? But none of us had created content like that before. So pretty quickly we agreed we need to bring in another co-founder if we are to do this, someone who knows something about content, and then called another guy, Nikolai is his name, and then it was the 3 of us. And over the next weeks, the idea just grew, and then we decided to do it. But early 19, we had my little service and my little product team to go with, and then we started going out and raising money pretty much on 10 slides and big dreams.
That's amazing. So what ended up being the business model of Podimo for people that listen, you know, to get it?
It's a subscription service. It still is. And the kind of the grand vision that we had for it was that we wanted to create an ecosystem where all these great content creators like yourselves and others would be able to make money of it. But traditionally, it would be public radio that put their shows on demand, and then it was a selected few here at home in Denmark that would get some sponsor deals. But in generally, it was public radio and enthusiasts creating the content. So we set up deals where we would split subscriptions 50-50 with creators and paying per minute. So we thought that was a pretty fair model. We realized pretty quickly, though, that it takes so many subscribers that not only use the service, but that listen to that specific show and no other, for it to ever become a substantial payout, because it would just be split between so many different shows, and we just couldn't get to that critical mass in terms of making any meaningful revenue. So after a year, we changed the model and then started bringing in household names from public radio, from other services that would have a big following, a big audience, because they would drive in users themselves and then pretty much bring in whatever it was we had to pay for them to join. And though we grew quickly and it went really well, it lost a bit of its magic, because this vision that we had at the outset was lost in the process, which was really sad, because we didn't succeed with what we initially set out to do.
Now, one thing that happens too when you go through that type of crazy growth, it's like, it feels like things are breaking all the time. No, it's like driving a Formula One car where all the pieces are wobbly to a certain degree. Yeah. How did it feel for you guys, and how did you go about making sure that you were able to do damage control with everything that was breaking around you as you were continuing to scale this thing?
It was difficult for us, like for anyone else. And it was, like you say, there were so many parts that were breaking. One being, we started actually building the service, and what we built was, we had two apps, so one for the App Store, one for the Play Store. We then had a full back office system where all our content creators could upload and handle all the content, and then we had our own handling subscriptions and everything else. So basically, full products. We built all that in less than 7 months before we released it with a team of 6 engineers, which was crazy. Really. And the one thing that broke first was the Android app. So once we launched, we could see that we had done about, I think it was about 50 iterations and tests with the app for the iOS, but only half as many on the Android side. And with so many different phones to develop for, it just broke apart. So 1 week in after the launch, our rating in the Play Store was 1.3. We were just hammered and completely torn apart for the crappy quality of the app, which for me, I didn't say that before, but I was the CPO and I had the tech team. I managed the tech team as well. So everything tech and product was my responsibility. And it was, I didn't sleep those first weeks. And I sat personally in the Play Store and in the App Store and answered every single review there was, and just started engaging with all the users that we had to just understand what is it that isn't working, and then report that back to the product and the engineering team. So, and over time, it took us about 6-7 months to get it up to scratch and then to raise that level. So that was one of the places where it broke immediately. When we launched, that was tough.
And then also, what about people breaking down, right? And people burning out? Because one of the things that you learned too with Podimo was, you know, that working culture and people getting sick and things like that. That I think that was a really big lesson for you. That hey, it's not only about, you know, saying goodbye to your social life. You need to also take care of yourself, kind of thing.
Yes, and I mean one. one thing is yourself, but once you then become a manager of other people, that responsibility just changes completely. And I didn't live a healthy life in the startups I ran before I got to Polymo, and I certainly didn't do it while I was there, because the pressure was just intense, from the expectations to the service when we launched it, just because I was surrounded by people who are very high profile in Denmark. I was kind of a no name in the group. So I felt that I had a lot to live up to, and I really struggled with my imposter syndrome during that time, just because I was the unknown, but I was responsible for everything product and tech. Also, what I realized pretty quickly was the more my teams grew, I had one in Copenhagen where the product team was based, and then our tech team was and is still based in Vilnius in Lithuania. So having a team of 7 that grew to 15, that grew to 20, the responsibility that came with was just enormous. And especially because I had employees that were very far away from me, so I couldn't see them on a daily basis. That was something that I hadn't done before. And that comes with its own set of challenges.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com, and we would love to take a look at helping you out.
Now, the company has also raised quite a bit of money, as we're talking about people, no? And
yes,
you know, we're talking about over 200 million. So how has it been, the journey too of going through the motions and seeing, you know, the transactional side of things? You know, because you were used to the bootstrapping way of doing things, but this was different.
Yeah, it was. I remember the very first pitch we did to a VC as a group. So Morten and Nikolai, my two co-founders, and I, we went to this meeting with a VC, and Morten said, well, the two of you are just here for questions. So if they ask you anything about the product or the content, you just answer their questions. I'll do the talking. Unfortunately, when I came into the room, I was the last one to enter. And I remember it was this very, very large, you know, conference desk. And there was a big screen at the end, the biggest I'd ever seen. And I ended up sitting at the end of the table by myself with all the investors on one side and my co-founders on the other. On the screen were two other offices with the exact same big tables. And I felt that everyone was looking at me, and I didn't know what to do with my hands. And I was just sitting there feeling really, really awkward. And then it felt like 3 minutes into the meeting, Morten just looked at me and said, well, tell them about the product vision. And I was like, we didn't have a product vision as such at the time. It was just, it was so early, everything. And the first question I got asked by the investors was, so from a product perspective, how are you going to beat Spotify? It's like, I knew they had just 300 million users. I was just, how am I going to answer that? So I did the best I could. But when we got out of the room, I just punched Morten and said, well, what the hell? And he just said, yeah, I just needed to know if you could swim. And, you know, from then on, yeah, I stepped up my game, and I didn't come unprepared to any meeting ever again. And luckily, I didn't drown.
That's incredible. And obviously, the rest is history. Now, the company, you know, has now hundreds of employees. In your case, you decided to turn page around the Series B. So how was that journey like, hey, you know, like leaving, you know, or turning page in after such a tremendous success of a chapter? You know, what got you to the point of, hey, you know, maybe it's time to explore other pastures?
Well, there are two things. First of all, ever since childhood, with the upbringing I have, it was always about trying to do something that could make a difference for others. So something impactful. It was never about, my motivation was never to make a lot of money. That in itself, for me, money is a result, not a goal. That's how it's always been. So once we got to a point where it was just about opening up another market or getting another big name in and driving in more users and help just doing small changes to return or increase retention, I just didn't love it anymore. So that was the one thing. We just lost that certain purpose, I felt, that was really my drive to begin with. And the second thing was the people side of things. I felt that we grew much faster than we were ready to. We were hit by COVID just like anyone else. At the time, we had people in four different locations, more than 100 in total, and we just weren't ready for it. We didn't have anything resembling HR at the time. We didn't have a safety net for our people. And they just really started to struggle. And I saw that up close, and they did so in all our locations. And that's when I started thinking that, or I started realizing that scaling a company is about so much more than just having a product you can sell in other markets. It's fine that you have a service that they'll pay for in other markets as well. But if you don't have a strong foundation in place on the people side, it's going to break at some point, and you're going to see people starting to suffer. You're going to see churn. So, and in the beginning, I think I felt really uncomfortable with it. But and it was, I think some would consider me to be very empathetic and a sensible type. But I also realized it's very much about the numbers as well. It's super expensive to lose people and having to replace them. And around that time, we started to see people leave just because they were burning out by the high tempo that it was all going on in. And we didn't have a safety net for them. I feel we lacked that. So after I left, everything is in place there now. It's going great. The people operation at Podimo is state of the art. But when I left, we didn't have it. And the decision I made then afterwards was, I now want to figure out how to build and not so much what to build. So before I even choose what the next thing could be, I need to figure out how to build a foundation that would be applicable, whether I would do something digital or would run a warehouse business. It didn't really matter. There must be something that can go across that you could build basically anything on top of. So I spent about 6 months doing that before then. Meeting a couple of guys who tried their hands in the energy space and built this very scrappy product, which is what we also do today, just in a better version.
Amazing. So Komundo. So let's talk about Komundo now. What is Komundo? I mean, how are you guys making money with Komundo?
Well, we work with energy data, and the reason we do that is because energy data is needed almost everywhere, but it's very hard to get to. So you will have all these different utility providers that serve a lot of different clients. There's no infrastructure that goes across the different energy sources. Usually, electricity is the one that's pretty accessible, whether you're a business or as a private person as well. Probably you have an app at home where you can see your consumption on the electricity side, but more likely than not, you won't have that for the other energy sources, and you certainly won't have one service that goes across all of them. So that's what we build. And the reason why is because, for one, starting with the biggest businesses, they have to report on their consumption and on their carbon emissions. in the annual report. So there's a lot of regulation being rolled out as of this year and the next. Secondly, we've built a product where you can, in real time, monitor your consumption, and you can actually start optimizing your operations. So what you changed yesterday, you'll be able to see the effect of today. You can, if you have a portfolio of more buildings, you can start benchmarking them against each other. So you can start looking for outliers. If you have 20 buildings, what's going on with this one over there in Connecticut? It's spending so much more electricity than the other ones. You can start making the adjustments. So it's for the reporting purpose, but especially that what really drives the business is actually the optimization, the fact that you can make those small adjustments and see the effect of it as well.
What were you looking for? Because I mean, here you've also raised the, you know, I think you've raised like over 3 million to date, but obviously, you know, coming from a success like your previous business, you know, into this one, I'm sure that it was easier to raise money. And also, what were you looking for, you know, from those investors? How did you filter them to make sure that you had the right people for this journey, which, you know, was now the second time that you had raised money and now you had the experience of doing so?
Yeah. So to your point about it being easier, it wasn't easier to raise money, but it was easier to get the meetings because they could see that I'd done it before. So getting the first meeting was certainly easier than it was earlier in my career. And when looking for the right investors, for me, it was very much finding someone who would understand my view of how you build the people foundation of things. So someone who buys into my vision as to how to build something like that. That was really important for me. Yeah, what I would say about the whole fundraising thing and about finding the right investors, for me, it's pretty similar to building any other team, really. It's about finding complementary skills, soft skills as well, where you can bring in people that will work well together. So it's about much more than just the money for me. A lot of people have some cash to spare, but I need someone who will give me something I don't already have and that can improve the group and the team in order to achieve what it is that we want to go and do.
So talking about people here, let's stick on this one and most importantly, you know, vision, because people really are betting on the future that you're living into here with Comundo, no? If I was to allow you to go to sleep tonight, Sver, and you wake up in a beautiful world, very beautiful, brace yourself for this one, where the vision of Comundo is fully realized, what does that world look like?
Well, you would certainly have a lot fewer people that would be suffering from stress. And I can say that because we're definitely the first startup in Denmark that launched with a 4-day work week, which is completely unheard of in the startup community. I mean, we've always been told that we need to work 60, 80, 100 hours a week to succeed, that you basically have to say goodbye to your social life and do nothing else, that you'll see your co-founders more than your spouses for at least 5 years and so on. You know all those lines. I don't believe that at all. I've seen it up close what it does to people if they over a prolonged amount of time work for 80 hours. It doesn't last. It will do for a while, but it'll break at some point. And as a business owner, I think that we owe it to the people that we employ, that the contracts we agree with them, the employment contracts we have with them, that the number of hours it says that they're supposed to work isn't just something that isn't just something that we're telling ourselves. It's the actual number. And some would say that that it doesn't make sense to see it that way. But I would say if you agree on a contract for 40 hours with an employee, if that employee works for 60 and that's how you raise your money with investors, then you show them that your capacity is actually 50% higher than it actually is. You can't go back from that. You're messing with the numbers, basically, is what I'm saying. So you actually have to be pretty strict about this in order to be able to assess your actual capacity. Or you will end up in this never-ending cycle where people work too much, where they'll burn out, and where you will eventually then have to replace the people, which is much more expensive than just making sure that they're doing well and that they're thriving in the first place. So what we do here is our employees don't work on Fridays, which is to the startup community pretty unheard of. But what it does is now 18 months in, we can see that productivity has gone up significantly. Creativity has gone up. The really amazing thing is now 18 months in, we have our well-being survey that we do quarterly. So one of the questions we ask is, are you a better version of yourself to the people that you care about in your private life that you have around you? That could be family and friends. 100% of our 22 employees say yes. Does the way we work at Komundo improve your mental health? 100% say yes. Even 81% say that their physical health has improved. So all these numbers are going up while we are actually increasing productivity. And the way that we can say that is because we've measured it from the outset, and we have some very strict principles that people have to follow in order to be able to do in 4 days what others do in five, and even more than that. So one thing we've done is, in compared to the average in both the public and the private sector in all countries, it's the same. Employees spend about 10 to 14 hours sitting in meetings every week. We've cut that down by more than half and turned that into production time instead. That gives you almost the fifth day that we're losing. The next thing we've done is we have slashed the length of meetings from hourly meetings to only 15 minutes or max 30 minutes. And we don't have any internal meetings in the morning. So we have dedicated time in the morning where people just get to do their work. And our engineering team do even more than that. They only have meetings once on one day a week. They have some very short stand-ups in the morning, and the rest of it is just production time. And then we've measured, we've asked them to keep a log on how much they get done a day. And on average, all our employees have now added 2.5 hours per day in productivity. Times four, you have the fifth day again. And all the while, they're all doing better. We have people who have struggled with the depression. We have, when they came to us, we have people who struggled being overweight. So I have one of my teammates has lost 50 kilos this year, all while managing a very large team and just being the best professional you could imagine. So it's pretty incredible that we are now seeing you can actually treat people well, work less hours, and get a better output at the same time. That's what we're really proud of.
So let's say I bring you back in time, and I bring you back in time to that moment, you know, where, you know, let's say you were in your early 20s and you were about to launch your first business, you know, let's say, you know, or 2008, 2009, you know, time frame. And I'm able to give you the opportunity of sitting in front that younger Sverre and giving your younger self one piece of advice before launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
It might just be that I would tell myself that breaks are important. One of the things that I think is connected to the whole dogma about having to work 80, 100 hours is that breaks are considered to be a waste of time. And it just isn't true. We have brought in researchers showing us exactly what it does for the brain to do a break. So we're very disciplined about that as well. We treat breaks the same way that professional athletes would do it. They would tell you the same. You can't you're not getting anywhere if you work out for 12 hours straight. It's the exact same thing with the brain. So I would probably tell myself that working for 12 or 15 hours a day is not going to get me anywhere except crashing at some point, which I have done in the past.
Sverre, for the people that are listening, that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Oh, they can do so. They can definitely reach out on LinkedIn. I check it daily. I try to interact with as many people as I can. I love engaging with others and listening to their stories. I like to share whatever it is that I do with them. If they find it at all interesting, yeah, just shoot me a message and I'll be right there.
Amazing. Well, Zver, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Alejandro, thank you so much for having me.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.